Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Nancy Alexander and I represent petitioner Mr. Jose Alfredo Bustos Bustos. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Since his prior removal order, Mr. Bustos' entire family fled his hometown in Guerrero, Mexico. That was after a Los Cuernudos gang member threatened his brother-in-law, Luis, with death at gunpoint. He did so from the back of a municipal police car. Then, Los Cuernudos gang members hunted down Mr. Bustos' brothers and father and threatened them with death. They then beat his brother to the point of hospitalization. Separate and apart from this, after Mr. Bustos informed on a Mexican drug trafficking organization to U.S. law enforcement, he received a threatening video. In that video, there were three men holding assault-style weapons wearing masks. In explicit terms, one of the men threatened Mr. Bustos and his family with harm. The man in the video stated, "We have people everywhere. Here, we have people all over the border, everywhere. You will not hide." Despite these facts and failing to consider them, the agency denied Mr. Bustos' motion to reopen to seek withholding of removal and relief under the Convention Against Torture. The agency appeared to consider the entire merits of Mr. Bustos' withholding and CAT claims, rather than limiting its analysis to that that's required for a motion to reopen. The sole basis for the agency's denial here was a failure to establish a prima facie case for withholding and CAT relief. There is no dispute here as to whether changed country conditions were demonstrated. They were. Rather, the agency found Mr. Bustos did not establish a prima facie case based on three issues: the acquiescence issue in the CAT analysis, the internal relocation issue on the CAT analysis, and the particularly serious crime issue in the withholding of removal analysis. With all three of these issues, the agency did not apply a prima facie standard to Mr. Bustos' case. As this court provides in Salim versus Lynch, once changed country conditions are found, as was done here, a motion to reopen need not establish a prima facie, or a motion to reopen need only establish a prima facie case for relief and need not conclusively establish that a petitioner warrants relief. This is a reasonable likelihood standard that the statutory requirements for relief have been satisfied. In denying Mr. Bustos' motion to reopen, the agency did not apply this reasonable likelihood standard. On the acquiescence issue in Mr. Bustos' CAT claim, the agency not only failed to apply the prima facie standard, but also did not apply this court's actual knowledge or willful blindness legal standards or consider record evidence of direct police involvement in torture. On the internal relocation issue in Mr. Bustos' CAT claim, demonstrating an inability to relocate is not a regulatory requirement to establish a CAT claim. It is therefore not part of a prima facie CAT claim and should not have been considered at the motion to reopen phase.
So is your argument that in exercising their discretion, that they were reviewing the IJ's decision for abuse of discretion, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's this court's standard as well.
And that's what we're reviewing, the IJ, the agency's decision for abuse of discretion, or the BIA, I guess.
Right.
So is your argument that that they didn't apply the correct law?
That they didn't apply the correct standard to the motion to reopen, and they didn't apply the correct law as well, which the abuse of discretion standard.
You can establish abuse of discretion if you determine that the agency acted arbitrary, capriciously, or didn't follow the law. And under our case law, we also add in, because we're dealing with an administrative agency, they fail to give a reasoned explanation. So I'm just trying to understand where you fit this.
I think they didn't apply the correct legal standard. And I think they also did not give a reasoned explanation. That's particularly true in the acquiescence analysis. There, the immigration judge never came to a conclusion on the acquiescence issue. And the board summarily affirmed. So there's never really any explanation of why Mr. Bustos failed to meet the acquiescence standard. And then also, within that acquiescence analysis, the agency never looked at the actual knowledge or willful blindness legal standard, and that failure to apply that legal standard is an abuse of discretion.
So your objection is with the limited explanation that was given in the BIA's decision.
I think that's part of it, but another part is that the agency did not consider record evidence. There was significant record evidence of acquiescence here, and that failure to consider record evidence is also an abuse of discretion. CAT regulations require that the immigration judge consider all record evidence, including affidavits, country conditions, police reports, and much of that was submitted here, yet the agency's analysis never mentions it.
So how much does the agency have to say here?
I think they at least have to acknowledge that this evidence exists and that they considered it. Often this court will look at, okay, did the agency make a catch-all phrase that they considered all evidence in the record? And here that wasn't even done. So there's no indication that either the judge or the immigration judge, the judge or the Board of Immigration Appeals considered things in this record like a declaration from Mr. Bustos' sister about when her partner was threatened with death from the back of a municipal police car. There was no indication that the lower court or the agency considered a prosecutor's report made by Mr. Bustos' brother-in-law about when he was threatened with death by gang members. And that goes directly to the acquiescence analysis because both of those pieces of evidence indicate that the municipal government of the local town, Huayutla, was directly involved in or with the Los Cornudos gang members. So that's an analysis that goes directly, or an issue that goes directly to the acquiescence issue. For example, the declaration and prosecutor's report indicated that Los Cornudos gang members arrived in a patrol car and when the gang members threatened Mr. Bustos' brother-in-law. They were seated in the right seat in the patrol car vehicle and were accompanied by preventative municipal police officers. Local police officers then also helped the gang member to escape in their patrol car and helped him to get out of town. And later in the report, when Luis and his family reported this to military officials, so not the local officials of Huayutla, but military officials, those military officials further offered no protection and instead told the family that they would be better off if they fled.
So your objection is that they didn't say that they considered that, whether they spelled it out or not, but at least made reference to it, and then say that doesn't rise to a prima facie level.
So there's no indication they considered this evidence which demonstrates a prima facie case. So yes, that evidence was never considered, and a prima facie standard was never applied to that evidence. The prima facie standard being a reasonable likelihood that Mr. Bustos qualifies for convention against.
He doesn't have to prove his claim at this stage.
Exactly.
But he will prevail.
I'm sorry, what was that, Your Honor?
He doesn't have to prove in his motion to reopen that he will prevail once he gets a chance to put on his claim for CAT relief before the IJ.
Exactly. All he needs to show is a reasonable likelihood that the statutory elements are met.
What's your argument with respect to relocation?
So with that, the prima facie standard really comes into play there because relocation is not a regulatory element of a CAT claim. So there's nothing that a non-citizen needs to prove with regard to internal relocation.
But I don't read when I'm reading the decision, I don't read that he's saying that's part of the prima facie claim. I mean, it's in the paragraph and he's talking about up above about government acquiescence, but because it's a legitimate consideration, although he doesn't bear the burden and the government doesn't have to bear the burden, you know, to show absolutely the opposite. The issue is legitimate for the board to consider, correct?
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor, at this stage. I think certainly when the immigration judge and when the board are considering the merits of his CAT claim, certainly the regulations require them to consider internal relocation among multiple other factors. But in making a prima facie case, Mr. Bustos doesn't need to show that internal relocation is impossible. So
no, he doesn't have to show it's impossible, but if the board says they've looked at it and there isn't evidence there, there is as to, I think, the state of Colima and Guerrero, but nationwide scope, that evidence is missing. Why isn't that a legitimate statement for them to make?
I think it doesn't apply the prima facie standard, but also it again doesn't look at record evidence. When they're looking at Cuautla, they're looking at the Los Cornudos gang, and they considered that, but they didn't review the threatening video that Mr. Bustos received from.
But do we know where that came from?
It sounded like it was from. Sorry, what?
Is there evidence of source?
Based on what is said in the video and based on the prior history of when Mr. Bustos informed on Mexican drug trafficking organizations, it sounds like it's from Mexican drug trafficking organizations from the border. And in fact, the man in the video states, we have people everywhere. We have people all over the border. So that is evidence of potential for harm outside of the state of Colima and outside of Cuautla. Overall, Your Honors, we are asking that this court grant the petition with instructions to the agency to grant the motion to reopen so that Mr. Bustos' withholding and CAT claims can be heard. And with that, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You may. Spurlock.
May it please the court. Matthew Spurlock on behalf of the United States. The question here of whether the board acted arbitrarily or irrationally in coming to the decision that the petitioner, in denying petitioner's motion to reopen, the board, in considering the claims relating to petitioner's CAT claim, clearly applied the reasonable likelihood standard that petitioner complains that they did not apply. That's on page 3 of the record. The board explicitly says, he did not demonstrate a reasonable likelihood that the harm he may suffer in Mexico at the hands of the drug trafficking organizations would be inflicted by the instigation or the consent or acquiescence of a public official. So the question of standard of review, this court's standard of review, of course, is the abuse of discretion standard. And in this case, the agency did not abuse their discretion in coming to this conclusion, because they did not act arbitrarily or irrationally, and they did not act contrary to the law in play.
Mr. Spurlock, can you point me, with respect to acquiescence, where the decisions refer to the police's telling the family to flee after they refused to investigate, where they engaged with the record evidence that they were present, the police were present for torture by the gang and drove torturers to and from the site, the torture site. Is there somewhere in those decisions that the BIA or the IJ referenced that?
No, Your Honor. That's in the immigration judge's decision. The immigration judge specifically refers to the fact that there is corruption in Mexico, that there is police corruption, and that's part of their decision. They don't specifically address the instances they brought up, but there's no reason to believe that they didn't consider those specific instances. And moreover, there's no indication. First of all, petitioner himself was never tortured. And it's not clear whether those specific events rose to the level of torture. It does show that there is, consistent with what the immigration judge found, there is a high degree of police corruption in Mexico, including in the area where petitioner's hometown is from. But in considering that, you have to look back at what the rule is here, is that no person will be deemed to have breached a legal responsibility to intervene if such person is unable to intervene, or if the person intervenes but is unable to prevent the activity that constitutes the torture. So in this case, although petitioner makes the argument that when they went to the military force in his hometown, his family, he wasn't there, but when his family went, that the military told the family that they couldn't help them and it would be better for them to leave. But that doesn't constitute acquiescence. It doesn't constitute acquiescence under Garcia Millon, in which this court found that ineffectiveness at stopping criminal activities is not acquiescence. And in fact, although petitioner and their reply brief, they distinguish Garcia Millon and Andrade a little bit, but the case that Garcia Millon relied on in coming into that ineffectiveness standard with regard to acquiescence was Tamara Gomez, which is a Fifth Circuit case. That's at 447 F3rd 346. And that case is more similar to this case. That's a case where the police informed the petitioner that they couldn't protect the petitioner's family from Colombian narco terrorists. And the court in Tamara Gomez found that that was not considered to be acquiescence. The fact that the local government or the local military says that we aren't able to protect you, you need to leave, that in itself is ineffectiveness. That's not necessarily acquiescence. And petitioner also brings up the fact that
you draw a distinction between being unable or being unwilling.
Well, Your Honor, in this context, the CAT claim, there is no unable or unwilling distinction, because that's a separate asylum distinction that we discussed of whether the petitioner meets the ability to show that the government would be unable or unwilling to protect the applicant. And that's not the standard that we had before us. That's distinct with the CAT standard. There is a difference. I'm not suggesting that the government officials' refusal or, you know, complete ineffectiveness or ineffectiveness to do anything is not would not show or tend to show possibly acquiescence. But I don't think that
my concern here is that you know, it's pretty clear that they don't have to prove their case. You know, they don't have to show that they're going to prevail on the motion, you know, on their claim for cat relief. They just have to show, you know, there's a reasonable likelihood that we might be able to establish a claim and reopen it. That's all. I mean, that's what I understand. And we say that you take the affidavits or the declarations or the information that's provided, you take it as true, unless, you know, it's just unrealistic. You shouldn't accept it. But that doesn't seem to be the issue here.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no specific issue with credibility or right. whether the story irons out or not. That's not what's at issue. And one could certainly suggest that, well, perhaps they made the reasonable likelihood standard, maybe they didn't. But I would argue that this court's standard review in considering whether the board considered the reasonable likelihood standard or not is whether they abused their discretion in coming to the conclusion that they didn't meet the reasonable likelihood standard. So the court certainly open to consider that, but we are arguing that the court considered the reasonable likelihood standard, the board considered the reasonable likelihood standard and appropriately determined that their evidence did not meet that standard. And if I could just briefly go back to one of the arguments that petitioner makes concerning acquiescence is that the local officials of the municipality where he's from have provided warnings to him individually and his family that they should not go back there. And although that's it's kind of a horrible reality that you have officials that would warn you, we cannot offer you protection, we would argue that that sort of alone indicates that they're not acquiescing. Why would a municipal official provide a warning to somebody if they were going to acquiesce in their torture? It sounds to me they're doing what they can to prevent torture of the petitioner returning back. And that would lead me to my next argument, which would be the relocation issue. And the agency also didn't abuse their discretion in finding that considering the relocation issue, that that it appeared that petitioner could relocate into a different region of Mexico. And under Maldonado, the board and the immigration judge must consider all evidence, and that includes relocation as one factor. And as was discussed, that this does not place a burden on the petitioner to show that relocation is impossible. But at the same time, it does not shift the burden to the government side to show that they have to specifically find that this person is.
But I think the issue here, I think you've stated it correctly, because there isn't a burden with respect to relocation and CAT. But I think counsel raised two points that would be helpful for you to respond to. First, she, in her reading of the BIA decision, she says that the BIA kind of implicitly, because of the use of prima facie on the first part of the paragraph, imposed some kind of prima facie requirement on petitioner on relocation. And then the second point is the point that the video basically says we're everywhere and we can get you anywhere. So if you would respond to those two points, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Your Honor. The first point I would respond to, the board does not go into great detail on the issue of relocation, of course, and to get this information, you need to look at the immigration judge's decision, which is affirmed by the board. It's not a summary decision, but they find that the immigration judge's call on this was correct. And the immigration judge specifically finds that the Los Cuernudos gang that petitioner claims to be the most afraid of from his hometown, they correctly identify that the record evidence provided by the petitioner doesn't indicate that Los Cuernudos are active anywhere besides his hometown. Even his evidence about the home state where he's from, Guerrero, there's a long article, I think it's from the University of San Diego, where they discuss all the different threats and the gangs that are active in Guerrero. And it doesn't mention, as far as I was able to tell, Los Cuernudos. It doesn't mention that gang. And so I think with at least respect to that, there's no indication that Los Cuernudos are a nationalized type of drug gang. And I would contrast that with the court's case in Xochitl, which is 962 F3rd 1175, in which the court found that the Los Zetas, which is a very large drug organization in Mexico, they concluded that finding relocation with Los Zetas was sort of was problematic because it was such a broad gang that there was no way to really be able to tell whether you could actually relocate safely anywhere in Mexico because they had such a far reach. But in contrast,
let me ask you this. So if you read the last sentence of that paragraph, it says the immigration judge properly noted the absence of evidence suggesting that this same risk exists countrywide. And if there's no real challenge to the credibility of the video, doesn't that show that there is some evidence suggesting that this guy might have a nationwide problem? Why doesn't that meet the prima facie standard?
Well, Your Honor, I think if you look at the video that petitioner provided that was a post on Facebook sent to his sister, I think the question there is, first of all, the immigration judge in conjunction with the finding about relocation also just found that the possibility of torture based on that evidence was speculative. There wasn't any clarity really about what the threat was, who they were. You can't tell from the record specifically which gang they're affiliated with. And although apparently one of the people in the video suggests we're everywhere, but we're at the border, but it doesn't really indicate that they would, where they would be or what sort of threat that amounts to. And I would just argue that I think that the agency didn't abuse their discretion in finding that that video didn't indicate a reasonable likelihood that petitioner would face torture based on, if he was able to relocate away from Los Coronados. I mean, clearly,
the majority. How about if you added?
They sure didn't say that. I'll go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry.
How about if you added to that the fact that a prosecutor in Oregon referred to Mr. Bustos as providing a gold mine of information in a number of different drug arrests in that state? When you add those things together, doesn't that at least get you over the threshold that somebody should have said something about that?
Well, it would have made sense if they would have mentioned that, but they considered it. I think based on just the breadth of what the evidence was just, we don't know who those people are, and it appears to be speculative whether or not these individuals have the power to do what they say they're going to do, or that they have the means, or where they're located. So whether or not that would prevent relocation is not clear enough to not establish a reasonable likelihood that he would be tortured if he could not relocate. I see my time has run out. If there are no other questions, then I'll just conclude.
Can I just make a comment before we pass this on? This case has compelling facts, and there are two other immigration cases that were on our docket, which also have compelling backstories. I just want to remind you, and you might pass this on to your senior leaders, the Ninth Circuit has a really great mediation office. There have been cobwebs growing on it with immigration cases over the last 4 years. In the appropriate case, I really hope that your office takes a strong look at whether it matters for either doing justice or saving resources or avoiding law that the government doesn't want. That you look into the possibility of mediating cases in the future.
I will pass that on, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Spurlock.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spurlock. You have some time for a rebuttal, Ms. Alexander?
Thank you, Your Honors. Yes. Here, the agency did not recognize that there were two distinct sources of potential torture, both of Los Coronados gang and Cuyutla, based on Mr. Bustos' family's political beliefs there. And so the drug trafficking organization at the border, after he informed on drug trafficking, that drug trafficking organization, and those two different sources of torture were never considered together. That this requires, in Cole versus Holder, that the two sources of torture be considered together in the aggregate, and that wasn't done here. No real mention. There's maybe one mention of a video, but no real analysis of that video throughout the whole agency's decision. With regard to internal relocation, the case Xochua Jaimes really supports a finding that here Mr. Bustos has demonstrated that he can't internally relocate. The IJ here properly noted the absence of evidence that the same risk that exists for the Board of Immigration Appeals found that the IJ properly noted an absence of evidence suggesting that the same risk that exists for Mr. Bustos in Cuautla exists countrywide. And similarly, in Xochua Jaimes at page 1186, this court disapproved of a noting of an absence of evidence because that also demonstrates that the burden has been placed on the non-citizen to demonstrate the inability to relocate. I think also in Xochua Jaimes.
So what's the proper construct? Because you're kind of meet yourself coming and going. It is proper, I think you would agree, that they could consider relocation, correct?
I mean, our default position is that at the prima facie stage, they should not be considering internal relocation.
No, I'm just asking in general for purposes of CAT relief, relocation is an issue, can be part of the analysis, correct?
Of course, yeah.
And when you say absence of evidence on that, does that necessarily mean that the burden is on the petitioner?
And I think that's what the court found in Xochua Jaimes, is that that does indicate that the immigration judge put the burden on the petition on the non-citizen.
All right.
And I think with that, Your Honors, we would ask that this court remand with instructions to the agency to grant this motion to reopen. And thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you both for the argument in the case. Bustos versus Rosen is submitted. And that completes the calendar for this morning, and we're adjourned.
This court for this session stands adjourned.